Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano. Here's what we've got for you today. Rasheed Wallace says LeBron would not be as successful in his era. Is that fair or foul? And the drama between Ben Simmons and the Sixers continues. Can that relationship be repaired? Meanwhile, Klay Thompson pulled up in his bucket hat this weekend to watch some baseball. But how will his game recover this particular season? And we'll count down the top five plays of Hall of Famer Ben Wallace's career. So lock it in, because The Jump starts now. Welcome to The Jump. I magically made it to the desk very quickly. I'm George Sedano. Today I'm joined by our senior writer for the undefeated, Mark Spears, and our NBA insider, host of the Hoop Collective podcast and New York Times bestseller, Brian Windhorst. Some more of our friends will be stopping by a little later. But first, we begin with some comments from our pal Charles Barkley, who was very critical of the Clutch Sports Group in a recent interview in a local Philadelphia radio station, 97.5 The Fanatic. Here's what Chuck said on the Mike Missinelli show. Quote, they just bully the league. A team or the league got to stand up to, wait a minute. I paid your guy. You can't bully me to trade him and me taking back some trash. So, Brian, what's your reaction to Charles's criticism?
You know, I really like what Charles says a lot of the time, but didn't he demand a trade out of Philadelphia at one time in his career? You know, this is really what Clutch Sports and Rich Paul do is they leverage the era that we're in. And the era that we're in enables star players to be able to force their way out of their situations basically whenever they want it. And if you're Ben Simmons, regardless of whether you have 1 year or 4 years left on your contract, and you watch Jimmy Butler force his way out of Minnesota a couple years ago, you watch Anthony Davis force his way out of New Orleans, you watch James Harden force his way out of Houston, they all got what they wanted. I think all of them right now are pretty darn happy with the decisions. Why wouldn't you force your way out of Philadelphia? And if Rich Paul can get that done, why wouldn't you go to Rich Paul to get it done? Ask Anthony Davis, who 18 months after Rich Paul demanded a trade for him out of New Orleans, had a ring, a five-year max contract, and a beautiful lifestyle. Tell Anthony Davis Rich Paul doesn't do a good job. I realize it doesn't make everybody happy, but Rich Paul is doing what he has been enabled to do by the current conditions in the league.
Man, I love Chuck, and I miss him, Brian. We haven't seen him in a long time. Yeah. But Chuck, like, it's funny with a lot of these older players, they forget about the stuff they did. And Brian, you mentioned it. In 92, Chuck asked for a trade. He was unhappy about the Sixers not going to the playoffs, unhappy about his salary. And Jim Lyman, the former Sixers head coach, he was quoted as saying he didn't want to be here. That Sixers team didn't make the playoffs. Chuck got his trade. He went to Phoenix. And guess where he was? Like Anthony Davis was after he left New Orleans. He was in the finals with the Suns. So it all worked out for Charles. And look, Rich Paul isn't the first agent to force his agent into different circumstances. And he won't be the last. But this is a business. And so when a guy like Blake Griffin gets tossed around like he did, or other star players get tossed around to places that they didn't expect to because they signed a contract, we don't cry about that, right? So, hey, man, it's I think we got to remember what we did in the past, too. With all due respect, Chuck.
Yeah, no question. Look, we all love Charles Barkley, and he might be watching right now, probably either at home or at some golf course, around the Phoenix, Arizona area. But here's the deal. When this trade was made, because he specifically talked about Anthony Davis, there were a lot of people, okay, including people on this show, who said, wow, the Lakers got fleeced. So which is it? Did the Lakers get fleeced? Did they steal Anthony Davis? It can't be both. Now, I don't know where Charles landed on that particular commentary, but I know there were plenty of people with a lot of different takes when it came to that particular trade. And here's the other thing, okay? LeBron and Clutch and this group may have started the player empowerment movement for this particular generation, but they're not the only people. Brian, you mentioned it. Jimmy Butler forced his way out of Minnesota, eventually landed in Miami. He didn't want to stay in Philadelphia after moving out of Minnesota. We've got a number of guys. Look at the Golden State Warriors, right? Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City, joined the Warriors. Look at their team in Brooklyn. So it's not just LeBron James and Rich Paul doing this stuff, Brian.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the big thing is that, really, if you can demarcate with two events in 2014, one, LeBron James moved to Cleveland, where he got there and basically said, Andrew Wiggins and those guys over there are getting traded for Kevin Love. And he put his team together blatantly. And Adam Silver took over for David Stern. Adam Silver has done a lot of positive for the league, but he is, during his tenure, has basically allowed the players to have more control. Unlike David Stern, who fought them at every turn, he has done it. And that really is the beginning of the player empowerment era, and it coincides with the growth of clutch sports, and I see no way that that's going to change anytime soon. And now, if you are a player who wants to alter his situation, you look at clutch, and that's why Zach LaVine going with clutch last week is a very interesting development as we look forward to the next 12 months in the NBA.
No question about it. And, you know, look, David Falk had a lot of power when he was a super agent in the NBA. Rich Paul is that guy right now. Chuck, look, when I go to Arizona, we'll have a drink and we could talk about this. Brian and Mark can come too. All right, let's move on to some
golf.
Public criticism. No golf. I don't golf anyway. Anyway, let's move on to some public criticism of LeBron James from a former opponent. Rasheed Wallace was on the $1 Million Worth of Game podcast and criticized LeBron, said he wouldn't be able to thrive in Sheed's era. Here's the quote. He probably would have held his own, but I don't think he would be as successful as he is now. It's a whole different era back then. Now, Mark, I don't know about you, but I'm old enough to remember LeBron James going for 25 straight points against Rasheed Wallace and the Detroit Pistons. It wasn't that long ago, but are these comments fair or foul?
I think they're foul. I'm trying to figure out this era that he's talking about, but I don't care if it's George Mikan's era, Bill Russell's era, Dr. J's era, Bird and Magic Johnson's era, Michael Jordan's era. There's no era that LeBron James wouldn't be dominant in. And I'm sure Brian Windhorst was at this game. I might have been. I'm trying to remember. But, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what this era is. He talking about high school, which college. Like, what era is he talking about?
What do you think, B?
The number of drives that I made up to Auburn Hills in my career, I can't even tell you. I don't miss it. The Pistons really did a great job with LeBron early in his career, especially when they had Ben Wallace next to Rasheed Wallace. But here's the thing. Obviously, this is low-hanging fruit. You can smash Rasheed for saying LeBron thrived against him personally. But I just don't think it's true at all, because in a way, the changes to the game have made LeBron sort of have to change his game and become more of an outside player, become more of a shooter. Back in this era that Rasheed's talking about, when LeBron could just use brute force, he was great. In fact, I know people may not remember this, but LeBron actually won a scoring title. And it happened in the era of bully ball against teams like the Pistons. And I'll go back to the player empowerment era, if that's also what he's referring to, when you didn't have clusters of super teams. LeBron probably would have been even more dominant because he wouldn't have had superstar teammates to depend on. So I actually really like Rasheed. I loved watching him play. I just don't think this comment holds water. And I think upon reflection, he'd have to agree with it too.
Good, Spears.
Well, it's slow news day, huh? These guys are talking some crazy stuff, man. Hey, man, look, based on what we're saying, I averaged 30 in college, man. Everybody like forgets what they did, and it just well, boy, man. NBA, God bless it. It's fantastic.
Oh, man. All right, let's get to the latest surrounding Ben Simmons and the Sixers. Keith Pompeo, the Philadelphia Inquirer, reports that people in Simmons' camp are not inclined to help the Sixers find a trade partner for him. So, given the public criticism from Doc Rivers after the playoffs and how his name was in the James Harden trade talks last season, Mark Stein of the New York Times reports that the Cavs are one team that's interested in him. So, Brian, is there a chance for Simmons to repair his relationship in Philly? And if not, where do you think he could end up?
Well, I've been around too long to say that there's never a chance of anything, but I would highly doubt it. One of the messages that Ben has sent back towards Philly is that it's not his job to fix his trade value. It's not his job to correct his trade value or raise his trade value. That is not something that is on the menu for him. And so with that out there, I don't think he's interested in coming in and trying to change the situation. And one thing that I think is interesting is that his contract is structured in a way that he's going to get half of his money by October 1st, $16.5 million. of his $33 million comes before he has to worry about getting fined a single dime for, you know, 41 of his games. So he's going to have a war chest that he can just sit this out. Now, I agree that the Cavaliers and other teams that are really interested in trading for a guy with 4 years left on their contract would be interested. That's also why you've heard a team like Minnesota and even potentially a team like San Antonio. These are organizations that typically don't do well in free agency, and so the idea of getting a star player under a four-year contract is very attractive. But Ben's value is so low right now, and the expectations of Daryl Morey on a trade are so high, we just are not in a trade zone for any team at this moment.
Well, I keep hearing California, California, California. That's where Ben would love to be. I mean, obviously, he's not in control of this. He doesn't have a no trade clause, so the Sixers can do whatever they want. You know, I'm going to throw a dark horse in there that I think really should make a run at Ben. And don't laugh. You ready for it?
Uh-oh.
Sacramento Kings.
Whoa!
There's this all-star or this Hall of Famer that's going in on Saturday named Chris Webber. When he got traded to Sacramento, they, you know, rolled the dice, did something against the grain, tried something different. He did not want to be there, but he got there. He saw the young pieces. He saw the love when he got to town, and there's not many places that are going to love you more than Kings fans will, who are as thirsty as can be. And if I'm their people, man, it's time for the Kings to do something different. You got De'Aaron Fox. You got Halliburton. You got some young pieces in Buddy Hield to trade. Swing for the fences. Try. You're in that Pacific Division. You haven't been in the playoffs since 2006. Do it, man. Like, just say those two superstars in the backcourt are off limits. Everybody else, like, they have an opportunity where everybody is, like, mad at Morey and doesn't want to do it. Kings got to do something, man. Because I think if they continue to run in quicksand and stay in the same spot, then a guy like De'Aaron Fox, I'm worried for him that next season he's going to raise his hand and say, all right, Vivek, I've had enough, man. I tried. I've been here for 5 years, whatever. It's time for me to go. So I think it's time for the Sacramento Kings to make a move just like they did with Chris Webber about two decades ago.
Yeah, listen, they added Davion Mitchell, too, to that mix in the backcourt, so they could use someone in there. They're going to have to move somebody, at least, to get someone like Ben Simmons. So we'll figure it out. We'll see what's coming up on the Ben Simmons front over the next coming weeks. But coming up next, Klay Thompson is coming back from injury after missing the last two seasons. How will his game translate after his recovery? Roz Golanwude joins us to discuss.
Fun guy, what's up, baby?
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
All right, it's time for Make Miss as Roz Golanwude joins us here on the show. Make Swole Patrol. So De'Aaron Fox posted this pic earlier this week of him in the gym. People joked on social media about him getting drug tested, and then he did. Meanwhile, in Boston, Jason Buff Tatum, also looking swole here.
Yeah, guys are in the weight room right now, but the feds are watching, it seems.
I know. Well, look, this happened to Alex Caruso a couple years ago. You remember he was talking about being swole, hey, and then he got drug tested right away.
Keep your muscles off the ground.
If you do that, then they ain't knocking at your door. That's how this is going to work.
Secret muscles, undercover muscles.
Yeah, let people find out later. Miss Rhythm. Richard Jefferson ran into a famous TikToker named Happy Kelly, and Richard learned a new dance. So, Roz, is Richard a future TikTok star here?
The answer is no. But actually, I'm kind of here for the entertainment. I don't even need him to be good.
Actually, the rhythm
is not bad.
Yeah, he's clearly not. And by the way, we are thankful to help you end the national nightmare of Richard Jefferson hosting this show as we are here today. So anyway.
We got a real pro in.
Yeah.
Well, Thank you, George.
Maybe that's what he was busy doing, you know, since he's not here today.
So I'm curious, does he have a TikTok I'd follow?
Probably not.
I would.
He doesn't care about anyone other than Richard Jefferson. That's how Richard Jefferson rolls.
I'm going to tell him you said that.
No, you can tell him because he heard it. I'm sure he did. And he knows I love him. Make nuptials. Dame Lillard tied the knot this past weekend.
Congratulations to this beautiful couple.
Yes, to his longtime sweetheart, Kayla. It was a huge wedding with guests like Draymond Green, Bradley Beal, Snoop Dogg, and Common. He had four outfit changes.
Okay, you better live your best life.
There you go. So, Roz, was this the event of the summer?
I mean, Snoop Dogg performed, Tevin Campbell. It was Dame Chella. Like, I wish I could have bought a festival concert ticket and been there. Okay, Draymond. It was the must-see wedding of the summer. I mean, because Danny Green had a pretty epic wedding, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. No, I mean, it was all over social media.
I didn't see it. I didn't see Danny Green. I saw this one because I follow my man Chris Haynes from Yahoo.
Yeah.
And he was posting all these pictures there at the wedding. So, anyway.
You're not an insider until you are invited to the wedding.
There you go. Welcome back
on,
to the jump. Ross Goldon-Wude here. Let's talk a little Klay Thompson with you. So Klay's on target to return this season from his torn Achilles, possibly around Christmas time. We've seen Klay working out on his Instagram, speaking of Instagram, and even showing up at a baseball game with E40 this weekend. So Roz, when Klay does return, what's the thing that you need to see from him on the court after missing these last couple of seasons?
Well, it's been 2 years. So I think also for Warriors fans in the basketball world, there's a little bit of setting expectations that would be helpful. But no matter what version you get of Klay, you're going to get instantaneous spacing on the court because the defense has to respect his shot. The good news is that, you know, his offense wasn't necessarily ever about incredible athleticism and explosion. It was more about his movement without the ball. Klay Thompson will go down as one of the greatest shooters of all time. He should go down as one of the greatest movers without the ball of all time. In transition, constantly running and hunting his shot. In the half court set, making the right reads for a catch and shoot, a curl because the defense is on his back, or a pull-up jumper. And another thing that helps Klay too is, you know, he's tall, his shot is high, it comes off his forehead.
Yeah.
But I would say I'd like to see this actually from his teammates. I'd like to see them get really serious about screening and helping him make up anything he lost because of the 2 years off and the Achilles and the ACL by screening well, getting him extra seconds. And then also, George, what made him so dynamic was that he played both sides of the ball. He was a brilliant defender.
Right.
And that's where, like, an ACL, which I've done, you know, can possibly affect lateral movement, and an Achilles certainly explosion and, you know, planting and pushing off. So, like, defensively, that might be something that is slower to come back. And I do feel like he gets a lot off of the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. And he's talked about it openly. Like, hey, I'm not going to be Klay Thompson that you remember right away. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to have to work into this. You've been through an injury like that.
Yeah.
There you go. Like, what is that process like once you get back on the floor?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, it's conditioning. And there's nothing like game conditioning. When Klay was at his healthiest, it's hard to defend Klay because you've got to be in great shape.
Right.
He's going to wear you out because he's constantly on the move. You got to run with him. You got to stay on him. You got to identify him. And another thing about Klay, I remember interviewing him. I was like, yo, what's your role? We were talking about roles. And he was like, I D up and I get buckets. Simple man.
That's true.
He gets it. He knows what he's out there to do.
It's true. No doubt about it. And he must have learned to shoot from his mom because his dad, Michael Thompson, who's my guy, did not shoot like that when he was in the league. All right, Michael, you know that's the case.
Klay says his mother was an excellent athlete as well.
There you go. All right. So, Roz, you've been all over this NFT game. And there's been a lot more action, particularly in the Bay Area. Let's start with Steph Curry, who has a new NFT-inspired avatar on social media. So what's Steph up to in this offseason in the crypto space?
You know what? Steph has been working on his crypto game. He's in these NFT streets. It started off with buying an NFT of a bored ape.
Okay.
He has a picture in his Twitter profile of an ape, which signals he's a part of the Bored Ape Yacht Club.
Yeah.
Relatively new NFT community. Why are you laughing?
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
You know why? Because you are speaking my language.
Oh.
I am Mr. NFT, Mr. Ethereum, Mr. Bitcoin. Give me all the crypto love.
I mean, so when I saw it, because I'm in these NFT streets too,
okay.
Like everybody was so excited.
Right.
It signaled like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a wave of big time celebrities coming. And the Bored Ape Yacht Club has a lot of celebrity support. And actually, like, it's reported Steph paid about $180,000 to get that ape. Now, still a man of the people, went into the Discord chat room, hung out with the other members of the community.
I love it.
So right there, but it didn't end there. So then he goes to Twitter and he asks for, does anybody have advice? Must be nice to Stephen Curry, because like the very next day, he just announced his partnership with one of the largest crypto exchange companies that's out there in FTX. And so he's going to be an ambassador, an investor, and they're going to work together on charitable causes. So, you know, Steph is out here.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And FTX, by the way, has also got the naming rights to the Miami Heat's arena down in Miami now. So everyone's getting into this space. So why are athletes in particular going after these avatars, these NFTs with these avatars?
To flex.
That's it. Simple.
No, it's much bigger than that. But I'll say, like, you know how we watch the athletes enter arenas and stadiums? They got the flyest new sneakers on, their kicks, their drip, their clothes, like the fanciest, most expensive clothes, an expensive, fancy watch. Well, that is a form of flexing. And now these avatars or profile pics are a way of digital flexing.
Right.
Makes sense.
And who else is in this space?
Andre Iguodala just bought a cool cat. JaVale McGee just joined a woman-focused NFT community called World of Women.
Okay.
Odell Beckham Jr. has a CryptoPunk, which is largely understood as like the historically significant.
That's the one.
Like the cheapest CryptoPunk you can get right now is like 300,000-400,000 and the most rare sell for millions.
Yeah.
So and the apes include Steph, they include LaMelo Ball, Dez Bryant, to name a few. So they certainly show your community that you're a part of, your status, your savvy, and lately your wealth.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And of course, NBA Top Shot is still a thing that's still around. WNBA has gotten into NBA Top Shot. We're going to get to that. We're going to talk some WNBA with you in a little bit, so make sure you stick around, okay?
I just finished my WNBA Top Shot challenge, so I cannot wait to get my Skylar Diggins moment.
All right,
more
with Roz coming up in a little bit. But first, coming up 3 days from his official Hall of Fame induction, we'll run it back with Ben Wallace's five greatest plays. Stay tuned. You're watching The Jump. Here's our next WNBA game. Tonight, the Aces host the Lynx. This one is big for both teams with just 4 games left in the regular season. Our coverage begins at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Undrafted in 1996, the Hall of Famer in 2021, man, Ben Wallace in a league of his own. But the defensive anchor of those great Pistons teams overcame much more than just a disappointing draft day 25 years ago. He got to Springfield, but it was a path for sure. Here's a preview of the Undefeateds, In Love with the Struggle, the Ben Wallace story. Check it out.
And now, the Detroit Piston legend. You know him as an NBA champion, a four-time All-Star and Defensive Player of the Year, the class of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, Ben Wallace.
You know, I always talk about being in love with the struggle. If you're not in love with the struggle, then you're not going to survive. I was starting to take life serious, not just going to school, but my life, period. I finally found somebody that believed in me as much as I believed in myself. People ask me what I'd say to the next Ben Wallace. I wouldn't say nothing to the next Ben Wallace. I'd say something to the people. I hope y'all recognize him when you see him. And hopefully you won't have to take the route that I had to take.
All right, peep this resume for Big Ben. 6-time All-Defensive. 5-time All-NBA selection, 4-time All-Star, 4-time Defensive Player of the Year. I was stunned just saying it. I couldn't even spit it out. And NBA champion, of course, in 2004. Crazy. Let's welcome back senior writer from the Undefeated, Mark Spears, who will be hosting the Hall of Fame press conference on Friday. Mark, when you hear the name Ben Wallace, what comes to mind?
Well, I think what's going to come to mind to the viewers is something new. Learning about his beginning in Whitehall, Alabama, where he was so poor at 5 years old, he didn't have shoes to wear to school. There was remnants of slavery all around him. He actually had a job picking cotton for a while, too. But for the true basketball fans, I think what they're also going to learn that's quite interesting is the Celtics had a chance to have Ben Wallace in 96. He was on their summer league team, and ML Carr and the late Dennis Johnson, they told him that you'll never be a big man in this league. And they ended up cutting him. He had a short stint in Italy, and then Wes Unseld gave him a chance with the Bullets, and the rest is history. So it's a remarkable story. The only Hall of Famer to average less than 6 points a game. He thought he was going to go to Canton for the Hall of Fame because his first love was football, not basketball. So I'm really excited for people to see the shorter version Friday, the longer version on Saturday in the Undefeated. And Ben Wallace couldn't have been greater in giving us his time.
And, of course, he's got a great guy to introduce him and yourself there, Mark Spears. So, all right,
thank you.
It is time to run it back to Big Ben Wallace's top career plays. Number 5. 2004 Game 7 against the Nets. Snags the board, then packs the putback. Wow. Look at this. Here we go. Yeah.
Hey.
Two-hand stuffer there.
Ben told me he's a better offensive player than he gets credit for. He could have went back to his Virginia Union days and shot a little more, but he made a point to let me know that during the taping.
05 baseline for the slam right there.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Fear the pro.
On the nasty dunk.
Coming next, right?
Yeah. So there you go. That's Philly. That's Philly.
Yeah, that was Stephen Hunter who took the brunt of that. 2002, he blocks Hakeem the Dream. Ooh. Now, does that count because it was Hakeem the Dream in Toronto and not Houston, though?
I mean, it said Olajuwon on the back of his jersey, so that's him.
I'm just messing with you. Come on. Of course it does. 2001, punches T-Mac shot off the glass. Check this out. Yeah!
That's a young T-Mac, too, now. We can't put age in this one.
Oh, no. No doubt. No doubt about that.
The teal jerseys. Nice block.
Yeah. That was Jerry Stackhouse there trying to defend him as well. 2006, I was here for this one. Send Shaq to the floor. Shaq was not thrilled about that. I can tell you that. Shaq won the series there, but he was not thrilled.
Yeah, that big fella was toward the end right then, so great timing by Big Ben.
Yeah, no doubt. And an unbelievable career for Ben Wallace, so congratulations to him. Congratulations to you, Mark, for introducing him, and thank you so much for joining us today.
No, man, thanks for having me.
All right, brother, take care. All right, shifting gears now to the WNBA, and in order to do so, we bring back Roz Goldunwude here. So the WNBA, Roz, 25 years old, and to commemorate, the league released their list of the top 25 players in league history. They began with 72 nominees chosen based on factors like on-court performance, ability, leadership, sportsmanship, and community service. Votes from a panel of media and women's basketball advocates decided the W25. So let's take a look at the list. Here we go. So Roz, they've narrowed it down to the 25 that you see here. But I want to know from you how they ended up getting to this particular place, and then who is your GOAT? I'm going to put you on the spot. That's the second question. But tell us about how this list was put together.
Oh, I got a GOAT. I'm not afraid to speak my truth.
Okay.
Speak my personal truth on this. But I'll first start with the making of the list. You know, if you compare it even to the men's side, I mean, you talk about GOAT, it's largely dominated by two names. Mm-hmm. Are you an MJ guy or are you a Bron guy?
Right.
You know, there's a few other names, but it's very much a two-sided argument. When you talk about the WNBA GOAT, there's arguments that are compelling for a number of players, which really makes this a fascinating discussion. And very cool that as the WNBA is doing this in season 25, this is a great way to celebrate,
no,
you know, the great legends of this league. So the people who narrowed down 72 to 25 are select media members, pioneers of the game. Now that we got that list of 25, you know who gets to decide the vote?
Who?
The GOAT? The fans.
Oh!
So the fans, so, you know, you better get this right, fans. But
it's all you, okay?
But basically, just so y'all know, you have until September 19th to vote. You can do it on Twitter, the WNBA app, or on the WNBA.com. But it's going to come down to that. I want to ask you really quick.
Okay.
The WNBA's GOAT, you know, typically we have a GOAT conversation. It's very much about what happened on the court.
Right.
This also includes, like, impact
community
off
service,
of it.
Right, things like that.
And that's controversial on both sides.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think? Should it be on court only?
I do think that when you talk about a league of women, like, and breaking barriers, I do think it matters to have community service and that kind of aspect into the equation. So can I give you my GOAT, or do you want to go first?
I'm going to put you on the spot first. Who's your GOAT?
It's Lisa Leslie.
Ooh.
I'm going to go a little old school. It's Lisa Leslie for me.
Why?
She was, when I first started watching the WNBA, it was because of her. Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching, you know, the dunking, all the stuff, like the first woman to dunk, all that stuff. Like, that got me to watch as a young man. Like, I was like, all right, let's go. It is their time. They're up next, right? Because that was their slogan. And Lisa Leslie carried that torch, I felt, in a way that was necessary at that particular time.
Excellent choice. All right, so then I'm going to say what my GOAT is.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Cynthia Cooper.
Okay.
And when you think about overall timing and impact, when the Comets won them four straight championships, and during those championships, who was voted the most important player in those championships? The finals MVP, it was Cynthia Cooper. She was MVP. She was scoring champion. And also, it's not just about accolades and stats. It's what the player made you feel. It's an emotional response.
Yeah.
And Cynthia Cooper absolutely was integral to getting the league off the ground and getting people excited about it. And we must give her flowers. She started playing in the WNBA at 34.
Right.
It wasn't like she was prime 27
right.
and still dominated these girls. So, you know, absolutely I got Cynthia Cooper there, but you could make an argument for the two-way game of Cheryl Swoops, who also won DPOY and MVP. You could make an argument, you know, I mean, Diana Taurasi typically is my GOAT, you know, all-time leading scorer.
Yeah.
Number five in assists, so she was making other people better as well, on top of being able to be a bucket
right.
and win chips. So,
and she was great in Space Jam.
and an actress.
Come on now.
Sue Bird, got to give her flowers.
No doubt.
Longevity and excellence.
No doubt. And maybe Breanna Stewart will eventually get on that list too.
She's only been in the league 4 years. So year for year, pound for pound, I mean, Stewie, in time, we could be revisiting this, might be the GOAT.
Let's revisit this very soon, okay? Thank
Absolutely.
You for joining us.
You're the best.
All right, you are. Roz Gold on Uday here. All right, coming up here on The Jump, Kawhi is out indefinitely for the Clippers, so all eyes turn to Paul George. What are your expectations for him now that he's the lone all-star in Los Angeles? Om Yongmasook joins us. We'll break it down next here on The Jump. Pistons fans should feel about him. He was on the Pardon My Take podcast and said, in part, quote, I was an all-star, all-NBA, dunked a few times, played in the playoffs injured, but yeah, I'd hate me too, Detroit. So, Wendy, you expect Blake to still get booed in his return to Detroit?
You know, it's complicated. I mean, I guess there's going to be some people that boo him. He did give pretty much everything he could in that one season. Really had a great year playing a facilitator position. But when you demand out of a contract, that can understand teams feel a certain way. But look, it helped them. They got the number one overall pick. Him leaving last year helped them get where they want to go. But I'm not sure that all the Pistons fans are going to get that nuance.
Yeah, he played hurt. He deserves cheers. You know, he didn't want to go there. He was forced to go there. Let bygones be bygones. They got caved.
Man, I was there for that game 3 in Detroit. That man played hurt. Give him some love. Here's the weekend lineup on the ESPN family of networks and the ESPN app. The U.S. Open Women's Final Saturday on ESPN. On ABC Saturday night, the Washington Huskies visit the Big House. Take on Michigan. The U.S. Open men's final is Sunday on ESPN, and week one of Monday Night Football is Ravens at Raiders in Vegas, and that's on ESPN and ABC. And of course, Peyton and Eli Manning are on ESPN too, while ESPN Plus has even more options for you. The Clippers schedule raised eyebrows, particularly from LA-based fans, including five different instances of 5 games in 7 nights, tied for the most in the league, and an 8-game road trip in January, and to boot, 10 different games that start before 1 p.m. Pacific time. That's a thing, man. I don't know if people realize that when you're out here. You can't be starting that early. Anyway, we now welcome in ESPN NBA reporter who covers the Clippers, Om Yongmasook, spending some time working at the U.S. Open. So, Om, thanks for joining us. And look, as you look at the aspects of the Clippers' schedule, especially as Kawhi is continuing to rehab from a damaged ACL, how worried should the Clippers be?
Oh, there's concern. Listen, George, they're playing so many games and so many nights with so little rest. They may want to think about Lawrence Frank and Michael Winger, might want to go try and sign Leyla Fernandez, the team phenom here, who's speedy and got young, fresh legs. The Clippers are going to need that, okay? Because they got so many games. This schedule is brutal. And I think that's why you saw the Clippers, look, they know Kawhi Leonard is going to be out for a good chunk of the season, if not all of it. When the playoffs start, it will be about 10 months, roughly, since Kawhi Leonard tore his ACL. This is going to be a long-term injury. And with that schedule, the Clippers are not going to rush Kawhi Leonard out there. You know that. They're going to take their time. And so they went out and kind of were very active on draft night. They got Keon Johnson, Jason Preston, Brandon Boston. I think the Clippers management would like to see some of these young guys play. They went and got Justice Winslow as well. You have Luke Kennard, Terrence Mann. They need to take the load off veterans like Paul George, Reggie Jackson. I think they went and balanced this roster a little bit because that roster was built to contend. The Clippers are being realistic right now. They still want to be in the playoff hunt, but they also know that with Kawhi Leonard out for a long time, they're not going to be like a top 3 seed in the West.
I think it's just if Justice Winslow stays healthy, he can certainly help them, particularly on defense. And, you know, I think Boston is unbelievably athletic. Jason Preston, though, I called his game at Summer League, or one of his games at Summer League home. That kid is really impressive. That kid can handle the rock. All right, Paul George nearly averaged 30 points a game in 8 games without Kawhi in the playoffs. And with Kawhi out indefinitely, what are your expectations for PG next season as he has to be the guy for the Clips until Kawhi returns?
Look, can we say that Paul George silenced some of the trolls with his playoff run last year? I'd like to think so. Paul George has a lot of trolls online. But you know what? He stepped up in the playoffs. And he certainly played well enough to think that he can carry this team without Kawhi Leonard. I think we could see MVP PG this season. He's in the right state of mind. He's comfortable. He's got his BFF Reggie Jackson on the team. And I think he's going to channel that Indiana Pacers Paul George like he did in the playoffs. He said that as well. When Kawhi went down, he said he has to be more of that Pacers Paul George. I think we're going to see that this season.
MVP PG Twitter will go nuts one way or another. He did finish third when he was in Oklahoma City a number of years ago. Ohm, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the tennis.
Thanks.
See you, bud. All right, here are the current odds to win the West. According to Caesars Sportsbook, the Clippers are currently ranked fifth at 9-1 behind the Lakers, the Warriors, the Suns, and the Jazz. And as we welcome back in Mark Spears and Brian Windhorst, Mark, I'll start with you. Do the Clippers still have a chance to be a threat in the West?
Yeah, what did you call it? MVP, PG? Look, PG was an amazing number one option and with the Indiana Pacers, and I think he will be the same this time around. He got to be back to his old self in the playoffs, and I think the rest of the Clippers will follow their lead. They've done a great job of getting a decent supporting cast around him. Serge Ibaka has to stay healthy. Reggie Jackson is back. And then I expect T. Lou to try to, you know, wake up Eric Bledsoe, wake up Justice Winslow. It's going to be a lot to carry until Kawhi gets back. But look, Terrence Mann, I think he takes a step forward this next season. And the Clippers will be in certainly in the playoffs. And I think PG will be in MVP contention and also be among the league's top scorers, if not the top.
Yeah, the Serge Ibaka component is a big one. That was a guy that they were really thinking was going to be a difference-making player for them last season. He had a back injury and needed surgery and just wasn't there for them. And I just don't know where his health level is going to be at the start of the season and going through the season. Where, yes, they do have a lot of 5 and 7, but they also are going to have some extended off time because everybody plays the same number of games in the same number of days. But I would say that if you've got a fantasy team out there, consider Paul George because he is going to put up giant numbers. I don't know if it's going to lead to giant wins, but not only do they need it, but he will be motivated to do it. It's not something he wants to do the rest of his career, but in this one-year window, without Kawhi, look for Paul to put up huge numbers and really to be a star on a lot of nights for the Clippers.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, I agree with both of you guys. I think that he is clearly more comfortable in this role because it's what he's done all his life. Like, having to set guys up, having to be the number two guy is not always as easy as people think. So, all right, coming up, we have the odds for who this year's leading scorer may be, or this upcoming season. Led by defending points champ, of course, the man you see right there, Steph Curry. Our guys make their picks on who the next top scorer will be. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Soon-to-be Hall of Famer Chris Webber had this to say about never winning a championship to our own Myron Metcalf. Take a listen.
Isaiah Thomas has a saying that there are bus drivers and people that ride the bus in the league. I was a bus driver. Didn't do a great job and didn't win a championship. Well, I did a great job but didn't win a championship, and I'd rather have my role as a bus driver than to have gone and teamed up with Tim Duncan, the greatest power forward ever, to win one. I'd rather be sitting here right now than have won one with him. Because at the end of the day, my son could say, how was it with you and Tim? We could look at stats. I could say he was cold. And he'd go, Dad, but he beat you. I go, yeah. Yep.
That's part of a wide-ranging interview on ESPN.com. So, Mark, do you agree with Weber's take there?
Yeah, he was outstanding with Sacramento. I remember those days and me not being too far from Sacramento. They're still in pain over that Lakers series, man. This is a team that certainly could have been in the finals and should have been in the finals.
All right, reported by our...
You know, there's no way you could watch that team and not love the way they played, man.
All right, reported to by our NBA insider, Woj. Center DeAndre Jordan intends to sign with the Los Angeles Lakers upon formal completion of a buyout with the Detroit Pistons. The 33-year-old is coming off his 10th season, which he averaged 7.5 points, 7.5 boards, a block in 22 minutes per game. So, Windy, how much does this help the Lakers' title chances?
Okay, when you sign a player to a minimum contract, you have to have expectations in that regard. Can he help them in a handful of games, as he helped the Nets last year? Yes. Is he going to go out there and average 10-10? Most likely not. So just keep that in mind. Keep in mind that if he helps you win one playoff game and he fills in for some injured guys, which we know will happen, he will have done his role. Would you keep those expectations? I think he'll fulfill that.
Mark?
how many true centers do they need now? Are they going to go back into the 80s and play? Like, and then they're going to use AD at center. So what they better get some first-class seats on this bench so these three guys can sit next to each other.
Let me interrupt.
They're trading Gasol. I just don't get it.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Brian will remember this because he and I were together in Miami. When LeBron went to Miami, there was Eddie Curry. There was Eric Dampier. There was Zydrunas Ilgauskas. Who am I missing there, Wendy? Jamal McGlure, Dexter Pittman. Yeah, there was a bunch of guys there. So, you know, that's what they're trying to recreate a little bit. All right, let's move on to gambling.
Yeah, a different time, though.
Yeah, let's move on to gambling. Caesars Sportsbook has listed their favorites to win the NBA scoring title. Bradley Beal is listed as the favorite at plus 300. Luka, second best odds at plus 450. And the reigning champ, Steph Curry, at plus 500 is third. Here are the odds of some of the favorites heading into this season. So, Wendy, who's your pick to be the scoring champ next year?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say he's definitely going to win, but a great bet, the guy I just mentioned, Paul George. I think he's plus 5,000. This guy is going to have to score for the Clippers. We saw him score in the playoffs. I know he's not going to play that many minutes in the regular season games, but he is going to put up numbers. And here's the thing on Beal. Remember, the Wizards are a lot deeper this year. Hopefully, they don't need him to score as much. So keep that in mind as well.
Mark?
I'm going with Zion down in the Big Easy. He's going to be a better player in his third season. He gets to the line. I'm guessing he's going to start making more threes. Yeah, it's time for Big Zion to take his game to the next level, and I expect it.
All right, I'm going to go
more
with
threes.
My crypto brother, NFT brother, Steph Curry. Back-to-back for Steph Curry, all right? I'm going back-to-back with Steph. He's joining me on the NFT bandwagon.
Choice.
All right, thanks to Roz, Wendy, Mark, and Ohm. The jump returns tomorrow on ESPN. Man. We'll catch you then. Have a great afternoon. NFL Live.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.